Great. Looks like we are rolling here. Good morning, everybody. I'm Representative Andrew Carlson, Chair of the Property Tax, Property and Local Tax Division. Our first order of business is to take the roll to determine who is present. I believe we have Ellen on the phone. Ellen, if you would please take the roll.
Representative Carlson?
Present.
Representative Vang?
Present.
Representative Hertaus?
Here.
Representative Bernardi?
Present.
Representative Drazkowski?
Present.
Representative Gomez?
Present.
Representative Herr?
Present.
Representative Hewitt?
He was present.
Present. I'm here.
Representative Marquardt?
Present. Present.
Representative McDonald?
Here, present.
Representative Petersburg?
Present.
Representative Runbeck?
Present.
Representative Zhang? Representative Zhang?
Okay. Thank you, Ellen. It does appear that we have a quorum present. I'll move approval of the minutes for the April 20th, 2020. Any discussion on the minutes from April 20th, 2020? You all are unmuted, so speak up if you have any questions on the minutes. Hearing none, all in favor of adopting the minutes, say aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed? Say no. Okay, the motion prevails and the minutes are approved. All right, that gets us to our first order of business for the day. So we have three, just a little bit of background, folks. We have three bills that we'll be hearing today. Each of the bills has an author's amendment. So we are just going to, we'll talk about the amendments, of course, but I would like to get those bills into the shape that the author prefers with a verbal vote. So we won't be doing roll calls on the amendments. And also all these bills will be laid over as well. So everybody will be unmuted when we take a vote on the amendments. So please do give your verbal consent to that. Or if you have objections, please do speak up. Our first bill on the doc is House File 4196. From Representative Poppy. Representative Marquardt moves House File 4196 to be laid over. Like I said, there is an author's amendment labeled DE1. Representative Marquardt moves the DE1 amendment. Ms. Dalton, I believe you're on the phone with us today. Can you provide a brief explanation to the amendment and how it differs from the original bill for us?
Yes, Mr. Chair, for the record, I'm Pat Dalton with House Research. What this amendment does is it gives the City of Sargent some additional time to file their missing financial statements. The city was originally intending to have everything done by June 1st, but because of the COVID virus, they just cannot get it done. So they are what the amendment does, it is gives them their 2019 LGA, but it delays paying them their 2020 LGA until all of their financial statements are filed and the state auditor certifies that they've done it for not only last year, but for this year.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate that. Any discussion on the amendment? Okay. Okay, you're all unmuted. Hearing none, all those in favor of the amendment, please say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, with that, the amendment is adopted. We do now have the bill before us. Representative Poppy, I believe you're on the line. If you could please describe your bill and introduce your testifiers.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This is a bill for, and thank you for moving the amendment. This is a bill for the tiny town, city of Sargent, Minnesota, population 61 as of the 2010 census. They got a new clerk, a new city clerk, last year, and the city clerk reports that she was left with quite a mess, and she was probably not fully informed about what all of the role and job duties were to be the city clerk. So she has had some time trying to work through what she has been given. She's fortunate in that she has a sister who is a city clerk in a neighboring small town, approximately a little bit larger than Sargent, and she's been getting assistance from the League of Minnesota Cities to gather all of the materials that is that are necessary. Unfortunately, just due to the pandemic and the restrictions for her and for other people, she hasn't been able to actually carry through and get everything, get everything done in the amount of time that was originally suggested. So I appreciate the amendment because that will allow her to be able to continue to do the work to try to resolve this problem. And they are, you know, it's not a lot of money, but it is a lot of money to the city of Sargent. So they would appreciate the action that you would take to be able to provide them with the local government aid, and they will do their darndest to get all the materials together and be able to submit those to state auditor in order to be able to get their next round of LGA. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have no testifier.
Okay, wonderful. Well, thank you for that information. It is appreciated. I do have, Kathy Doctor? Is she on the line with us today?
Good morning.
Good morning. Hi. If you could please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I appreciate you allowing us the opportunity to speak today. My name is Kathy Doctor. I'm with the Office of the State Auditor. I am the director of our Government Information Division. We oversee or receive financial information from over 3,000 local units of government and special districts. And I'm here today to talk about House File 4196 regarding the city of Sargent. We support this bill. We have been working with the City of Sargent and the League of Minnesota Cities. Our goal is to get to have these cities receive their local government aid. Sometimes they do run into difficulties, and in this case, with a new clerk and treasurer. And when you start those new positions, there's a lot of job tasks and responsibilities that they have to do. And I think sometimes it gets a little overwhelming for them. So we want to make sure that these cities are getting their aid, and we're going to continue to work with the League of Minnesota Cities and this city so that they get their reporting in, and they do a good job with it, and they will get their local government aid. So appreciate you allowing us to speak today, and I'm available for questions if anybody has any.
Wonderful. Thank you. Appreciate your testimony today. Okay. Members, opportunity for any questions. Give you guys a second to let us know. Any questions for the bill author or Ms. Doctor? Not seeing any. Okay. Well, Representative Poppy, do you have any closing comments for us?
Thank you for the time this morning, and I appreciate your support.
Wonderful. Well, thank you for joining us this morning. So with that, Representative Marquardt renews his motion that House File 4196, as amended, be laid over, and that bill is now laid over. Thank you, Representative, and we're going to move on to our next bill. Let's see. Our next bill for consideration is House File 4255. Representative Fabian, I'm going to say Representative Hertaus is going to move House File 4255 to be laid over. There is an author's amendment labeled the A1, purely a technical amendment. Representative Hertaus moves the DE1 amendment. Let's see. Any discussion? I'm going to give them a chance to unmute everybody here. Any discussion on the amendment? Okay. I'm not hearing or seeing anything. All those in favor of the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say no. Okay, with that, the amendment is adopted. We do have the bill before us. Representative Fabian, I believe you're on the line. Could you please present your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the opportunity. Much of what Representative Poppy said about Sargent, Minnesota, can also be said about Roosevelt, Minnesota. Their problems were very, very similar, differences being Roosevelt is twice as big as Sargent. They've got 140 people or whatever. the other thing that's different is in the 2018 election, they elected a new mayor and an entire city council. There was a lot of confusion, a lot of turnover. They got a new city clerk at that time as well, Joyce Claypool. And then when some communications started, they found out that they hadn't filed their paperwork and they hadn't gotten their LGA for years. 2018, people can see on their bill. So we went to work with Joyce and Gary Carlson and Matt Grossel. Roosevelt actually lays on the border between Roseau and Lake of the Woods counties, about 12 miles east of War Road. The amendment simply changes the number in there. It raises it 1,000. There was just an error in the drafting of the bill. I want to thank Pat Dalton and staff for catching that error, and would appreciate your support. Thank you.
Wonderful. And I believe, Ms. Doctor, if you wanted to provide some testimony as well, if you'd want to, anything else?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. We also support this bill, and I'm very pleased to say that the City of Roosevelt is doing a very good job and has submitted a lot of their financial information already. We just have one piece, so this is really great to see this. So we're happy that more than it won't be an issue with them getting their aid. And like I said, we'll continue to work with the city and continue to work with the League of Minnesota so that the city gets the aid that they need. And I also note that this city did go through a lot of changes over the last year to two, but their clerk treasurer has done a really good job of communicating with us, and we greatly appreciate that. So that would be it. We again support this. Thank you very much.
With that, member questions. Any member questions for the bill author or Ms. Doctor on this? Give you guys a second to let us know. Okay, not seeing any questions. Representative Fabian, closing comments.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Committee. Roosevelt is a great little city. It's located just a few miles south of Lake of the Woods, so come on up and visit Roosevelt and enjoy Lake of the Woods this summer.
Fantastic. Well, thank you, Representative, for joining us this morning. We do appreciate that. With that, Representative Hertaus renews his motion that House File 4255, as amended, be laid over. And with that, the bill is laid over. Thank you so much for joining us, Representative Fabian, and enjoy the rest of your day.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair,
right.
Members.
You're welcome. All right, members, we got one last order of business. The final bill for consideration is House File 3876 from Representative Petersburg. Representative Petersburg moves his own bill, House File 3876, to be laid over. We have a couple amendments on this one. Let's see. But first, we have the author's amendment. Let's see. You guys should all have that in front of you.
I believe that's 805.
Yes. Um, So we have Representative Petersburg moving his amendment. All those in favor of the author's amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, say no. Okay, that's... Oh, wait a minute. Hold on a second here, folks. Yeah, okay, good. I'm getting a note here. That's pretty significant. We're going to want to spend some time to allow staff to explain that. Do we want to do the A2 amendments quickly? We'll come back to that. Let's do this. Let's stick with that. Let's stick with the author's amendment and go to have Ms. Dalton provide some background on this, please. Ms. Dalton.
Thank you, members of the committee, and Chair Carlson. The amendment, the A2 amendment, essentially is going to provide cities with some additional flexibility in their use of their tax increment financing and local sales taxes and special sales taxes. To the extent that that money is not encumbered, this amendment will allow them to use that money for general fund purposes. Ms. Hagler's on the line as well, and she can talk more about the TIF provision if you would like. On the sales tax provision, this applies to general sales taxes, lodging taxes, liquor taxes, admissions taxes, and food and beverage taxes. However, it does not apply to lodging taxes as it relates to the hospitality industry. Any lodging tax revenues that are dedicated to tourism bureaus remain dedicated to tourism bureaus.
Thank you. And Ms. Hagler, any additional comments with regards to the amendment?
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Can you hear me?
We can.
Okay. This is Alex Hagler from House Research. I will just add quickly to what Ms. Dalton said about the TIF language. She covered it pretty much there, that only unobligated funds, which would be those increment that is not dedicated to making bond payments or other financial obligations, would be eligible for transfer. And for both the TIF and sales tax provisions, these transfers can be made up until December 31, 2021. And both provisions do have a public hearing requirement, which requires that the municipality approve the transfer of the funds and what the funds will be used for.
Wonderful. Thanks. And it looks like all members have been unmuted. So just to clarify again, this is the author's amendment, the A2. And we'll just by voice vote, all in favor of the A2 amendment, say aye.
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 Any opposed, say no.
No.
One no. Okay. With that, the amendment is adopted. We have one more amendment before us. It's the A4 amendment. Representative Hertaus, if you would want to please describe your amendment for us.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And what the A4 amendment does is, you know, we're in uncharted territory here with this COVID response, and you know, I have a little bit of concerns that we're going down a trail with regard to redirecting what two funds were intended for. But as long as this is temporary, I'm okay with that, but I think it's important to put a little bit of guardrail around it. So all that this amendment does is basically it says that the increments that may be on deposit, the money that can be used for this are just the unobligated portions of those funds from the date of enactment. So there could be some extra cash laying around that would get transferred to the general fund, but that may precede future obligations. So It basically just puts some guardrails around it and makes it a little bit tighter so that the money isn't used inappropriately. Thank you.
And thank you, Representative Hertas. Members, this is a clarifying amendment. It's one I think we can all accept. I would definitely recommend voting in favor. So we will do a voice vote on the A4 amendment. And all in favor of the A4 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? Okay, with that, the A4 amendment is adopted. Okay, got through that part of it. All right, we're back to Representative Petersburg. Representative Petersburg, if you would please just talk about your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The bill started out as some issues that we're having in, especially in greater Minnesota, with some of our redevelopment TIF districts, in which cities are trying to develop blighted blocks of property, and they were having extreme difficulty in acquiring all of the properties and getting the project up and done within a five-year period. As you can imagine, things move a little slower. And so they were inquiring about the possibility of giving them an extra 5 years to accomplish that for redevelopment districts, which I think is reasonable to do that. And then as we started hearing about some of the COVID-related expenses that cities and municipalities are having and the some of the constraints on some of the federal and other state programs that they have that are very specific, it got to be suggested that maybe there are some other avenues in which we can help temporarily for some of the cash flow and some of the needs that are going to need needed over the next a year or so. Normally, I don't really like to see expansion of uses for things, especially sales tax and others, that are impacting the individuals. And I know that there are times in which we need to micromanage some of the municipality expenditures and so forth. And then there are times in which it's best for the local communities to actually have a little bit more authority. So the guardrails that I think are most important on this particular amendments are that this is temporary. It's because of the unprecedented financial struggles that we're going to be having over the next 18 months or so. The guardrails are putting in the deadline, the sunset, that this only authorizes through the end of next year. And so with that, I think this gives at least another tool in the toolbox, shall we say, for cities and others to be able to utilize some funds that are currently sitting there. Obviously, the obligations are still going to have to be covered, and the funding is still going to have to be taken care of because these projects will still need to be completed, and it is a contract with the municipalities. So we just felt that this would be one way that it would be helpful. And I'll stand for any questions as well.
Thank you, Representative Petersburg. And I'd just like to say it's been a real pleasure working with you over this past week and putting together these kind of list of options for municipalities during these unprecedented times. So it's, working over the phone and just kind of getting this work done. It hasn't been easy, but I do appreciate having worked with you over the past week. We do have some testifiers. I think let's get through, just to kind of maintain some sense of order here, if we can get through our testifiers, and then we'll get to member questions. First on my list, I have Dan Dorman from Greater Minnesota Partnership. Dan, if you're on the line, if you could introduce yourself and please proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. I want to thank you for hearing this bill and thank Mr. Petersburg for, or Mr. Petersburg for all the hard work he's done to bring it this far. The Greater Minnesota Partnership, of which I'm proud to represent, has had an interest in this type of legislation for the last couple of sessions. And what we're hearing from our members, and it came up in the interim at a couple of housing hearings we've had, is because we have cities that are trying to redevelop multiple portions or multiple parcels with an eye towards housing in a couple of cases. And what they have found is that in greater Minnesota, due to the timing and other things, it sometimes takes longer than 5 years to assemble these parcels for the eventual redevelopment. Currently, the workaround would be just to let the blight stand, let a board of buildings sit there, and that impacts neighboring properties. It also could impact the, if they're still trying to get a developer to come in and look at these projects, it's just not going to look as good. So what the cities are asking is that they could extend the current five-year clock to 10 years, which should be an adequate amount of time to get these projects going. So it doesn't impact the amount of money that's eventually involved in the TIF. It just gives them an extra 5 years to assemble all the parcels before they begin the new construction. It would allow them to get rid of the blight immediately so people wouldn't have to look at it. And I think in the long run will result in better projects in greater Minnesota. So it's a relatively small change, but I think it's an important change. And we sure appreciate the consideration of the committee. That's all my testimony, Mr. Chair, but I'd be happy to answer any questions that you or others may have.
Wonderful. Thank you, Dan. I appreciate your comments today. And I believe you submitted a letter as well. Is that correct?
That is correct, Mr. Chair.
Okay, wonderful. So, members, you should have that. It's online. You can locate the letter there. Another point of reference with regards to Mr. Dorman's testimony today. Next on the list, I have Mr. Craig Clark. Mr. Clark, are you on the line?
I am, Mr. Chairman.
Wonderful. If you would, please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Representative Petersburg, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Craig Clark. I'm City Administrator in Austin, Minnesota, also a board member of the Greater Minnesota Partnership. We're asking for your help today to address some increased flexibility for the Minnesota TIF law and allow one more of Minnesota's most advantageous tools to meet the reality of an often expanded timeline for redevelopment projects in rural communities like Austin. The reality in redevelopment projects take a much longer time in greater Minnesota and often come with public support for these projects. This leaves us dealing with unnecessary blight for extended period of time with the current TIF law. I think in our packet, we submitted, I'm not sure it made it in your packet, but we have a picture of a property that is in Austin. It's basically a 1900 vintage house with an addition that was put onto it for a motel. It had sat vacant for many years and was a clear blight on the community. We acquired that property in partnership with our HRA and demolished that property. What we've done by doing that is to address the immediate blight, but the long-term use of that property is going to be hamstrung by the lack of being able to use the redevelopment TIF. Ideally, we'd like to establish the basis for the increment where the valuation stood and remove the blight and roll the 25-year period forward and start the TIF when we actually get the project built and the certification. But we understand moving from 5 to 10 years would be a big step in moving in that direction, and certainly understand wanting to take an incremental approach. As Dan mentioned, you know, it seems counterintuitive that essentially Minnesota statutes encourages the blight to stand when, you know, we can board it up and let it set for as long as we want and then tear it down. It certainly clearly met the blight test. But we'd rather get rid of the blight, establish the basis, and then build off of that and assemble the parcels necessary. You know, in a rural community, our budgets are tight, and we have to assemble a lot of funds to be able to make those, assemble those properties and make it attractive for a developer. We're already challenged by our prevailing rents and the like. So to try to get a developer to come to a rural community like Austin is already a challenge. Clearing the site, establishing the basis would seem to be a prudent way to move forward to help encourage redevelopment of blighted areas.
Well, thank you, Mr. Clark. Appreciate your testimony today. If you could please stay on the line in case we do have some member questions, that would be appreciated.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, and for all testifiers, once you've completed your testimony, if you could please stay on the line in case we do have member questions. I've got two more testifiers. Next, we have Jason Nord from the Office of the State Auditor. Jason, if you're on the line, if you could please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Sure. Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. Can you hear me okay?
We can.
Very good. Well, thank you for allowing me to join today and offer some testimony. My name is Jason Nord. I'm the Director of the Tax Exempt Financing Division at the Office of the State Auditor. We don't take any policy positions on what you may choose to do with regard to tax exempt financing, but we thought we would share a few items of feedback on how the oversight and administration of the changes could be made a little bit better, and just recognizing that TIF isn't a subject that everybody deals with every day, just to share a few observations with consideration. My remarks here are summarized in a letter that was sent, and I believe is also posted on the committee page for people who want to refer to that. Regarding the original provision of the bill of the extension of the five-year rule for Greater Minnesota Redevelopment Districts, from an administrative standpoint, the only issue that we want to note is that while it extends the five-year rule to a 10-year rule, there should also be a corresponding change to the six-year rule so that when the six-year rule says beginning in the sixth year, it means beginning in the 11th year for these extended districts. And then I thought it may also just be helpful to share that back in 2010 when the recession was an issue, there was a temporary extension of the five-year rule for districts due to the economic consequences. That is something I just wanted to make you aware of. And it's also been helpful to hear the testifiers, and we wanted to have a clear understanding so that we can answer questions in the future as to why the provision is only applying to Greater Minnesota redevelopment districts rather than all redevelopment districts. Moving to the A2 amendments provision about the temporary use of increments, I wanted to alert you that under current law, a municipality already has the option of returning unneeded increments. And when they do that, the county auditor then redistributes them back to the city, the county, and the school district in proportion to their tax rate. So cities already do have an opportunity to return funds and receive a share back to use for general unrestricted purposes. And this provision actually may effectively allow cities to retain dollars that would go to the counties and the school districts. So you may also want to understand the issue that there are many cities that are very diligent about returning unneeded funds, and there are other cities that maybe retain and sit on unrestricted funds or unneeded funds for a while. So you may want to recognize that this provision could create a little bit of inequity there or an incentive for future behavior as to whether cities would be diligent in returning unneeded funds. An additional observation or question we have is as to how this provision would work with the interfund loans. It's pretty clear when increments are obligated to a bond or to a pay-as-you-go note, but pay-as-you-go notes, bonds, and interfund loans are all defined as bonds under the TIF Act. So we wanted some clearer understanding as to whether interfund loans also work a little differently. A lot of times, an interfund loan is just when a city uses money from another fund to pay for TIF expenses with the intention of repaying themselves later on with interest. And sometimes TIF authorities don't necessarily expect to be fully repaid or repaid at all, but the interfund loan is there so that if there's money available after other obligations are paid, that they would be able to reimburse themselves for the cost. So it's a little unclear as to whether a TIF district with an interfund loan may make these transfers prior to paying off their interfund loans, or whether they would be required to pay their interfund loans first. And if they were able to make the transfers, then that would just delay and increase the interest that they're accruing on their interfund loans. So moving from that on to just some more technical recommendations that we have that would make oversight, I think, a little bit better for this provision. We would ask that you please require that the spending plans that are required to be adopted, that they be sent to our office. When provisions similar to this happened in 2010, we had a double the time trying to track down who was using that authority. And so receiving the copies of those spending plans would be extremely helpful. I think it would also create a lot of clarity and resolve confusion if at the same time they have to adopt their spending plan, they have to adopt a corresponding amendment to their general TIF plan so that we know how the expenditures that are authorized by the spending plan relate to the original structure of the expenditures. I think making those amendments at the same time would be very helpful to avoid confusion. But also offer that the expiration provision currently is tied to when they can make the transfer. It may be helpful to tie that to both the transfer and the use of the funds so they're not just making transfers to retain without an immediate need. Getting into TIF weeds a little bit more, with TIF districts, you can pool funds, and there's a limit on pooling. And I think it's clear that any funds that would be transferred under this authority would be considered out-district expenditures or out-district uses. But clarifications that effect would alleviate any possible ambiguity on that matter so that we can appropriately apply pooling limits after this authority expires. And then please consider, this is rather rare, but sometimes TIF districts receive funds inappropriately or they improperly retain funds. For example, if a TIF district should be certified at the end of 2019, but they still got 2020 increments due to some error or oversight, it would be nice to clarify that improperly received increments would not be eligible for such transfers. So those are our remarks, and again, I'd be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you, Mr. Nord. And I thank you again for reaching out to Representative Petersburg and myself the other day to kind of walk through these with us. You raised some reasonable considerations, and we will be taking a closer look at that as far as what you described today as well as what you put in your memo. So thank you for giving us kind of a heads up and walking us through those considerations. Jason, please stay on the line in case there are some member questions for you when we get to our testifiers.
Sure.
Next, we have Pat Trudgeon from City of Roseville. Pat, are you on the line?
Yes, I am, Mr. Chair. Can you hear me?
Yeah, good morning. Thanks for joining us. If you could please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, for allowing me to spend a few moments with you today to discuss my support for House File 3876, which will temporarily allow for use of funds generated in TIF districts and other municipal uses and provides flexibility in the use of special taxes as well. I am Pat Trudgeon, the city manager for Roseville. As a city manager, I do appreciate that the committee is looking at how the state can help local governments in these very unique times. As you know, local governments provide direct services to our state residents, from making sure that our community is safe and responsive to emergencies, keeping our streets plowed, protecting and providing open space, and ensuring buildings and facilities are constructed in a proper and safe manner. The COVID-19 pandemic has really dramatically altered how local governments are providing services. Roseville facilities have been closed to the public during the stay-at-home order. These facilities include our city hall, our park building, skating center, and Roseville's deputy registrar license center. We believe these closures are prudent in stopping the spread of COVID-19 to protect the community at large and our employees. I'm also proud to let you know that during the time of the stay-at-home order, our city continues to provide a majority of our services due to our quick adaptation of technology and the dedication of our staff. Our core services, such as police, fire, utilities, streets, building inspections, have continued. However, this disruption from our normal operations does come with a financial impact. Roseville has incurred unbudgeted costs for additional PPE purchases, extra cleaning of our facilities and equipment, overtime for our first responders, and the purchase of social distancing materials and equipment. More significant, however, is the loss of revenue during this time. We've had to refund about $100,000 due to the closure of our park facilities and cancellation of our recreation programs. Our deputy registrar license center has already seen a $200,000 drop in revenue. In addition, understanding the tremendous impact the shutdown has caused to our local businesses, the Roseville City Council recently approved refunding a portion
of the on-sale liquor license fees to Roseville restaurants and bars. We are also lowering additional business fees and waiving late fees for utility payments for a three-month period. These actions will reduce the fees collected by the city by $60,000, but we do feel strongly that we must do everything we can do to help our business community and our residents. In Roseville, we work very hard to keep our property taxes as moderate as possible, and we rely on fees and other revenue sources to reduce the use of property taxes to fund city services and programs. The loss of revenue that I mentioned earlier is greatly impacting our budget for the remainder of this year, as well as future city budgets. We are implementing cost cuts and have done some limited furloughing of seasonal employees, but that will not be enough to cover budget shortfalls brought on by this COVID-19 pandemic. I'm concerned that we will have to turn to utilizing additional new property taxes in future budget years to address the pandemic-related costs and revenue loss. Every city and township, as you know, in the state are facing the same challenges as we are in Roseville, with increased costs and reduced revenue. We all need some help. This bill, as drafted, will allow local governments in Minnesota the flexibility to address the financial impact of COVID-19 in a way that best fits their own local community's needs. I believe this legislation will be good for local government and ultimately the local taxpayer. I once again want to say my thanks to the committee in considering this proposal and urge you to support it. Thank you.
Mr. President, thank you so much for your testimony. Please stay on the line in case we have some member questions for you. Okay, that is the end of our list of testifiers. Member questions. First on the list, I have Representative Gomez. Representative Gomez, if you could please first indicate who your question would be directed towards, so we can also bring them back on the line, and then proceed with your question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I have a, I think I know the answer to the question, but I guess to me it seems like this, so the TIF district kind of captures the increment that in the tax base that would normally go to cities, counties, school boards, and other, you know, taxation districts. And so this basically, like, puts money that would have flowed proportionally into the general funds of those entities just into the general fund of a city.
But I guess to me it seems like this, so that
Hello? Yes, Representative Gomez, you're kind of breaking up on us there.
Okay, I'm sorry. I wasn't. So basically, like, this feels like it's kind of making it so that, like, the increment that normally would have flowed proportionally to cities, counties, school boards, and other taxation districts is into their general funds is now just flowing into the general fund of the city. And so I guess I'm just thinking about, like, you know, cities, counties, and school boards that occupy the same geography obviously, like, are work together on issues. And so I'm just curious about that piece, about the impact on counties and school boards in particular.
We'll hand this over to Ms. Hagler to provide a more succinct response. But in short, the potentially, yes. The funds would be available to municipalities general fund. But with that, if Ms. Hagler is with us, if she could provide perhaps a better answer.
Mr. Chair and members, essentially, yes. Mr. Chair, you summed it up pretty much okay. I would maybe defer to Mr. Nord if he had maybe a more practical or technical answer to this, as he might be able to talk more about what happens kind of on the ground there. However, part of my understanding is that a portion of the funds that are considered unobligated are that the city retains for itself for like administrative expenses that they pay to themselves. Would this also would include that? So it's not so I think Mr. Nord kind of alluded to this in his testimony that some cities are better, or not better, sorry, quicker at distributing the funds than others, so there may be some interplay with that. So I'll just defer to Mr. Nord if he has anything to add here.
Oh, thank you. And Mr. Nord, I believe you're still on the line with us. And Representative Gomez, also Mr. Nord's letter can be found as one of the attachments too, which does a good job of succinctly kind of speaking to their additional considerations for the bill too. So I would direct members to review that as well. But Mr. Nord, if you want to add to the answer to the question, that would be appreciated.
Sure, Mr. Chair and Representative Gomez. There's kind of a difference between increments that are legally excess increments that must be returned versus just having extra increments that you're not necessarily required to return, but you don't necessarily need. So if a TIF authority were to choose to return increments, yes, the funds would be redistributed to the city, the county, and the school district, and this provision essentially would be taking what would have otherwise gone to the county or the school district and using it just for the city's purposes. But if they had decided to retain those unneeded funds, that they could potentially find other expenditures that might be eligible, like Ms. Hagler mentioned, rather than paying themselves administrative costs, or they could find additional administrative costs, or they can find opportunities to pool those funds if there's room within their pooling limits to find expenditures that they can spend them on. So yeah, when increments are returned, they are returned to the three jurisdictions. So I hope that further helps understand and answers your question.
Thank you, Mr. Nord. Representative Gomez, any follow-up before we move to the next member question?
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I just want to, I'm concerned about this proposal for a couple reasons, for the issues around schools and counties. I'm also concerned that it potentially, when I first joined I'm obviously new to the Property Tax Committee. I first joined it, at the beginning of this session, and trying to learn about local option sales taxes, and it occurred to me, I'm like, okay, so sales tax, I know from reading the tax tax incidence study, that it's one of our most regressive forms of taxation. And so I was like, why are we doing all these local option sales taxes? Why don't we do local option income taxes? Like, that seems much more fair. And so I started looking into it and learned about this sort of the Minnesota miracle and this trade-off between kind of like why we have LGA and CPA. And then it was really designed to make it so that people across, children particularly, across the state of Minnesota, regardless of the tax base, the city in which they were born, would have access to, an equitable and equal kind of access to educational opportunities. And so for that reason, a very small or low-income city, it would be not good to put a local option income tax in place, because it would increase inequity. And so to me, it's sort of like, I know that last year in 2019, we were able to get the LGA and CPA levels back to where they were in 2002, right, 20 years ago almost. But over time, we've had this erosion in funding basic public services that cities, counties, and school boards also. There's also been a huge erosion in the portion of the cost of education that's borne by the state. And so this is why we see more and more reliance on, property tax levies, local option sales taxes, TIF. These are our most regressive taxation tools. And I don't mean to be going on to, like, making points that I've made up previously in committee about other bills, but I feel like it's applicable here as well. COVID-19 is revealing the impacts of decades of austerity and disinvestment in the public good. So that's why we have our cities, our counties, our school boards in these very desperate situations where they're looking at not being able to provide the basic services that their residents expect and need to have a good life. And so to me, it's like, this is about decades of people in our positions in the state capitol not having the political courage to do what it takes to fund public services, and then we're relying on these, like, you know, just sort of increasingly inequitable tools that we have, that the locals have at their disposal. And so we're putting them in the position where we're saying we're not going to use our progressive taxation tools. All we're going to do is, like, we're going to increase the, you know, the estate tax exemption, and we're going to lower rates on rich people, and we're going to give corporations loopholes. And then we're putting it on our locals to go to their to go to their property tax base to fund basic services. And so I understand that we're in this position where it's like we can't undo decades of these decisions, but, like, we have to be honest about the situation that we are in. This is because of our unwillingness to do what needs to be done to fulfill the obligations that we have to the people of Minnesota. And so, you know, I mean, I'm very dubious about this proposal just because I feel like it rewards cities with large tax bases, potentially rewards cities who have used TIF in ways that kind of push the limits. And I don't blame them, because I know that our cities and counties and school boards are doing the very best with what are in the historical kind of context, increasingly, like, meager resources. But, you know, I find these proposals pretty, like, problematic. So I'll stop there. I'm sorry, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Gomez. And just real quick before we move on to our next testifier, Representative Joskowski, you're on deck. As we are all hearing from our local units of government, our cities, our townships, our county boards, as well as our constituents, you know, in looking for ways in which to assist those communities the best we can, when knowing that, you know, these truly are unprecedented times, I would also draw members' attention to just the highlight the cooperative nature in terms of what we have before us. There is, within your materials, a letter signed by the League of Minnesota Cities, the Municipal Legislative Commission, and Metro Cities. So truly trying to find a statewide approach in terms of providing some additional options to addressing these budgetary shortfalls and loss of revenue. So please take the time to read through those documents. I think it just speaks to the broad work effort that was put into this by a lot of individuals. Representative Joskowski, you're next. If you could please first indicate who you'd like to direct your question towards so that you can get them on the line, and then proceed with your question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning. I really don't have anybody to direct a question to. Just had some comments for the committee as they look at this. You know, I share some of Representative Gomez's concerns, not all for the same reasons, but I think we owe clarity to the property taxpayers and realize that these TIF districts are a temporary increase in taxes for property taxpayers to pay the rest of the costs of those governments operating. And so extending this to 10 years is going to disrupt that clarity and certainty even more. I'll admit, too, as being chair of this committee for 4 years, and I kind of heard it in your voice, Mr. Chair, too, this area of TIF is a very complicated area to understand all the different gears and cogs on the gears. And so I really think as we look at the underlying bill provision here, that extends it from 5 to 10 years in the rural areas, I think we need to take some more time to look at this. It was very clear to me and Mr. Nord's testimony that there's a lot of implications for this that I think need a lot more discussion. And I think the migration of this policy to being 5 years in statute didn't happen accidentally. It's happened over time, and it stayed there largely. And if you look at the bill, lines 2.9 through 2.15 on the bill, you'll see those times when it has been extended. It's been extended temporarily and then returned back to the five-year length. And I think there's some wisdom in that. So I'm, you know, I I don't know that we want to or should jump into making this change from 5 years to 10 years. Part of me says, Mr. Chair, these cities can't get this done in 5 years. If there's a blighted building, like the pictures that I've seen on the attachments to our email, they can't 5 years to get the project done, really. So that's, and I'd like to hear, not today, but at some point, from some of those cities is why in the world they can't get that building project done in 5 years. It just doesn't quite ring true. I think we need to have certainty and clarity for the other tax, for the other municipalities, and certainly for the property taxpayers as well. And I'll just point out, I think everybody probably knows, but the provision I've been talking about, the underlying bill, is a permanent change in law. The amendment that both the author and Representative Pertos brought, I think those provisions are good. I think it gives flexibility and it's temporary and then it's done. I think, and I would recommend and urge you, Mr. Chair, as you decide which provisions to bring forward, maybe leaving this permanent provision, the extension from 5 years to 10 years, leaving that on the table for us to consider in the future and talk about more in depth, because this is very important for us to talk about more in depth and understand better. But bringing those temporary provisions forward for the COVID-19, you know, discussions and work we're doing, I think might be a good approach. So thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you, Representative Drazkowski. We do appreciate your comments on what we have bringing before us today. I have one more testifier signed up, Representative Vang. Again, if you could indicate who you'd like to direct your question towards and then proceed with your question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess this question will be more directed towards the process. You know, I think this is a good bill. I think this bill makes sense considering the times that we are in. But I do see that it needs a little bit more clarification. And guess, will there be another opportunity for us to talk more about this bill moving forward?
Correct, yes. The plan would be to incorporate this within the division report.
Okay, sounds good. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Hertos, I see you've got a question for us. Please proceed with your question. Is Representative Hertos on the line?
I am. Did you unmute me?
We have you unmuted, yes. We can hear you now.
All right. Thank you very much. I do have a closing comment before Representative Petersburg wraps up, but I did want to ask the manager of Roseville if he could just comment briefly on the city's annual budget, its general fund budget, and what type of amount it maintains in reserve.
Okay. Mr. Cousin, do we still have you on the line?
Yes, I'm here. Thank you for the question, Representative Hertos. So we do have a roughly, we have about a $52 million budget on an annual basis here, and so we do peg our general fund reserve to between 35 to 45% of the budget, and so of the general fund budget, I should say. And currently, I think we're closer to the end of or the bottom of that amount, about 35%. We have used reserves in the past few years. So it's probably about $6 million. However, that's important that we keep that minimum threshold in there because of the cash flow and other needs that come up here. So we do try to maintain a reserve, and we're closer to 35% at this point.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Hertos.
Thank you. And thank you for that reply. And clearly, larger communities, larger cities have larger budgets and they have larger cash flows. we all get that, and a lot of what we're addressing is for smaller communities that have rather limited resources, obviously shifting some costs where there are increased 1 or 2% within the general budget. You know, some communities have greater latitude and a greater ability to make adjustments within their budget, so I think my point is made about that. Mr. Chair, I wanted to make just a couple of more comments. I think Mr. Nord has brought up some very interesting points, and I do think that we should be incumbent upon the Property Tax Committee to revisit some of these issues and make sure that TIF is used in its proper intent. Now, there's a lot of discord with regard to tax increment financing. Some people think it's a wonderful tool. Others think it's not. Many people think it's a subsidy to big business. But for those members who haven't served on the Property Tax Committee for any length of time, and with some of the comments made earlier, with regard to school districts and other localities, that would ordinarily receive taxes from these properties. It's important for the newest members to understand that the premise of tax increment financing has to pass the what is called the but-for test. And the circumstances in which tax increment financing and its districts that are created are proposed is the premise that if it were not for this additional help, the development would never occur in the first place. So the idea that maybe other taxing jurisdictions are getting cheated out of money is a little hollow, at least on the front end, the purpose of which, if with this helping hand, the tax increment district and the financing that is used to help create it, in the end, once the increment expires, is new tax revenue for those very districts that wouldn't be getting anything further down the road. So again, you know, an overview of the premise is this is a helping hand to create additional tax base rather than to deprive these other districts from tax base that they're not getting. It is true that some communities, and like all programs, there's always seems to be a few loopholes, and some people are more savvy in creating their districts and maybe having some extra projects in there that if there is available increment within the limits of the law, there are some things that, you know, get added into it and, you know, can be done. And those types of things, it's kind of like knowing how to game any program. You know, we might, as a tax committee, maybe want to look at some of those things too. And my closing remark would be, as Chair Marquardt would also know, during the 2010 recession, we saw quite an inundation in those subsequent years in 13, 14, 15, 16. We saw a lot of requests for extensions on tax increment financing. And the reason for it, of course, is that, you know, the money and the market changed dramatically. And certainly I think a lot of communities should have their ducks in a row and have developers, you know, with financing and a financing plan in place before they launch these tax districts rather than to create them and then look on how to get it developed. I think there should be more groundwork in the front end because, to Representative Drazkowski's point, if everything is lined up and ready to go, the 5 years should be a reasonable window. Nonetheless, things do happen that are unanticipated, as was the Great Housing Recession. And now we're seeing another circumstance. Right now, commercial property owners are getting calls from their banks, what's your backup plan? The default rate on commercial leases, I'm being told by people who have contacted me, is running in the 55 to 85% rate right now, especially these smaller strip malls, which largely house, you know, your bars and your restaurants and your Snap Fitness and your massage therapy and chiropractic offices. And so suddenly, landlords and commercial property have with no cash flow. And so this is a very serious problem. And I think that as we move forward next year and the year after, we're going to see similar requests for extensions of time again because of the downturn in the economy. Right now, banks aren't interested in helping commercial property. They don't want to transfer the liability onto their shareholders and their depositors. So banks are really tight-fisted right now with regard to restructuring commercial loans and real estate loans. So that's just the reality of the marketplace. It's the things we suffer with all the time, and that's why we have a legislature. And thank you for your time, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Hertaus. You raised some good points, and it got me kind of thinking, too. A lot of us, before coming to the legislature, served on city councils or as mayors, and that's how we kind of cut our teeth in learning about TIF. So, yeah, it really is a complex issue. And, you know, as talking with many of you over the last couple of weeks, you know, during these unprecedented times in terms of finding ways of allowing for some flexibility on the part of the cities that we represent to best address their current and, quite frankly, into the future considerations, I think this will do some real good. With that, Representative Petersburg, closing comments, please.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, the discussion around TIF is one that's been going on for a long time, and this bill was not designed to fix TIF or to correct a lot of the concerns that people might have. It was really to address a couple of specific needs. And one of the things that I think we need to remember about our TIF programs is that it is one of the opportunities that local communities can kind of take charge over their own development. And in greater Minnesota, at least, and I'm sure it's true of Metro also, there becomes greater and greater competition for businesses and others to come into the communities. And communities need that business. They need that industry or whatever it might be in order to maintain its viability. Not everybody needs to move to a metropolitan area, and they need to stay out in other parts as well. And this isn't a competition that I want to say is one or the other. I'm just saying that there are competitions out there, and so TIF allows local communities to have some ability to be able to draw. And because it's a contract between the city and the company itself, it has some certainty. And so, again, talking about the 5-year to the 10-year rule, it doesn't mean that you have to take 10 years to do it. It just means that you have up to that amount to do it. And so I think people and communities need to have some input. And if we really think that it's better to have government control more at local levels than at state levels, we need to provide opportunities for them to be able to do this. And so in regards to the amendment part of it that added the other two provisions, yesterday, as I was talking with the Department of the Auditor's Office, there were some things that they had brought up that I think should be clarified, and I believe that I can work with the chair and make sure that gets done. Mm-hmm. One of them, especially, is we should have the Auditor's Office be notified of any plans in TIF projects, since they are the ones that are auditing it and maintaining that data. So we need to do that, and we need to make sure that it works well. But during this unprecedented time, we do need to offer communities opportunities to be able to utilize funding sources and others within the parameters of what they can do. But we also want to make sure, at least I did, that the community is aware of what they're doing. Obviously, the notification issue is there as well, because we do need to give the authority to communities to be able to deal with their taxing authority also. So with that, I just ask for your support and moving forward. And I guess with that, I will renew my motion to lay this over.
Wonderful. Well said, Representative Petersburg. With that, Representative Petersburg renews his motion that House File 3876, as amended, be laid over. And with that, the bill is laid over. Members, that finishes our agenda. Thank you for your work today. Just as a note, Mr. Jessen will be sending out more information later today about the coming days and the work that we still have before us. So keep an eye on your email for that. And with that, members, we are adjourned.